Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I'm now joined by David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David! Are we headed toward an orange wave hitting Ohio in the next few days?
I think so, man. It's a litmus test. It's a small sample size, but like my network of Tennessee friends is turning out for a road game. Like I've never even seen them turn out for a home game. A significant portion of my college friend contingent is going to be there. The group texts are popping off. Twitter's going nuts with all this buzz about Tennessee invading Columbus. My estimation is that it's going to be 30% Tennessee. So that's you know, I've seen the StubHub figures, you know, but I think at the end of the day, you get about maybe 27,000-28,000 Tennessee fans in the stadium.
Yeah, today, according to SeatGeek, 42% of resold tickets went to Tennessee residents, while only 23% went to Ohio residents. It's, you know, Ohio State had a great season, but then having to face the Tennessee Volunteers is going to be a tough one for them. And I do think that Tennessee has a shot. I understand that Ohio State is the most talented team in the country. But if Tennessee can establish that run with a guy like Dylan Sampson, get Nico calmed down at the beginning of that game, I think they got a puncher's chance.
Yeah, absolutely they do. Absolutely. So the problems, too, for Ohio State kind of align pretty well with what Tennessee's strength is. I mean, Tennessee's strength as a team this season has been their defense, and in particular their defensive front. Well, where has Ohio State kind of struggled here as of late? It's the offensive line. It's the injuries that they've had there on the front that have kind of hampered the entire operation for them, as we saw in their loss to Michigan. I think Tennessee's pretty well equipped to exploit that weakness. So pretty good chance this one ends up lower scoring, especially if Ohio State plays similar to the way they played against Michigan, which was very conservative. And, you know, I think Tennessee's defense is pretty good and to the point where, you know, if you could try and get too aggressive against Tennessee, they can make you pay for that. So, yeah, I kind of think this one will be a lower scoring because you mentioned Dylan Sampson. Like, you know, the Vols are going to try to ride him. You know that. And if there's one big concern for me about Tennessee, it's kind of what it's been all year, which is just that the receivers just aren't quite at that elite type of level that you really need for that Josh Heupel offense to be humming. And so that puts a lot of pressure on the run game against an Ohio State defensive front that, mind you, is really, really talented. So, you know, honestly, I could see this one being a 17-14 type of game.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Staying in the SEC, Alabama's AD, Greg Byrne, had some very aggressive words today on social media about NIL and how it is time for action because Bama Nation has to fight back. This is, of course, a response to them being left out of the college football playoff. He said, although we have been competitive from an NIL standpoint, our competition has us in their sights and are actively trying to surge ahead with NIL. How do you expect Alabama to respond to being left out of the college football playoff? And what more can they really do with NIL than they're doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We always used to see Nick Saban be the one who would make these desperate pleas to the fan base, right? And now it's the AD kind of picking up the slack and seeing what he can do because you know, it was always during the offseason or during the player acquisition time when Saban would kind of say something inflammatory and motivate the fan base. And, you know, I just don't think Kalen DeBoer really has that type of cachet yet to where everybody's going to stop and say, whoa, did you see what Kalen DeBoer said? Where he's going to take over the airwaves, take over social media with some sort of comment. So, you know, now you're getting an impassioned plea from the athletic director. And I think what we're seeing is Alabama doesn't really have, you know, an advantage on the competition anymore. Mm-hmm. They did when they had Nick Saban because of who Nick Saban was. And now it's like, you know, in the NIL and revenue sharing era, things are tightening up and getting a lot more equal. And I'm sure that's pretty uncomfortable for Alabama and their AD. So, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, he wants there to be significant changes and whatnot, but a lot of people do. And I don't know that Greg Byrne's voice carries the weight that maybe he thinks it does.
Alabama has the number four recruiting class in the FBS right now, only trailing Oregon and SEC rivals Texas and Georgia. They've already been able to flip a quarterback from SMU. They flipped a safety from Michigan, but they have lost four scholarship players so far to the portal. Do you think that is more of a sign of the leveling out of D1 sports in college football that we have seen because of NIL, or is it a lack of confidence in a coach like Kalen DeBoer after a disappointing season?
Yeah, it's probably that. It's probably guys figuring out that they don't fit with a new coach who brought in a new scheme and a new staff and who was a bit up and down in terms of the results. I mean, look at what Alabama could be walking into if Jalen Milroe goes pro or if he enters the portal. I mean, dude, he was their team this year. It was all Jalen Milroe. And, yeah, of course, like Ryan Williams was spectacular. They got some future pros on the defensive side of the ball. I'm not saying there weren't other good players, but they leaned on Jalen Milroe and were over-reliant on him in a way that should make you really scared if he decides to go pro or get in the portal. Because if that's what happens, I mean, look at Kalen DeBoer's success as a Division I head coach. It's all been predicated on the quarterback. He had Jake Haener at Fresno State, who was a total stud. Then he had Michael Penix Jr. at Washington. Now he's had Jalen Milroe at Alabama. If Milroe leaves, who's next at Alabama, right? Like, that's a huge question that I have. And, you know, I would hope, honestly, Connor, that, like, if Milroe goes, I hope that their next quarterback isn't currently in the portal. Because if they're trying to build a national championship team based on the quarterback talent that's in the portal right now, I don't think it's going to happen. So, you know, you might be seeing a preemptive strike here from Greg Byrne at Alabama saying, hey, please, please give money, because if Milroe decides to hit the market, like, we're going to be in big trouble.
Do you think that it is also a bit of a warning sign to DeBoer saying, hey, man, if you can't keep these guys on campus, if you can't make Alabama the standard in college football that they have been the last few seasons, I know that it's only going to be your second year, but that hot seat might be heating up if you can't get us to the college football playoff.
Isn't that crazy, man, to think that, like, the first team out of the CFP, the head coach after 1 year on the job, like the fact that we're even broaching the conversation of hot seat, only at Alabama, man, only at Alabama. But yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, if they go out there and go 8-4 next year, I mean, what do you think the discussions are around Kalen DeBoer this time next year? Right. I mean, it's going to be nasty. It's going to be ugly. And we always knew following Nick Saban was going to be tough, but man, in this era where you got Texas and Oklahoma and the SEC, it's only gotten tougher. And now you look at Auburn and what they're trying to do. I mean, they went out and got their quarterback. They got Jackson Arnold. They're going to be spending big. And so I think that's as much of it as anything. If you look over across the way at your in-state rival and you get a little nervous feeling like they're building towards something big next season. And you know the dynamics of that rivalry within the state. And, like, you know, heaven forbid there ever be a situation where Auburn is recruiting at a comparable level or better than Alabama and has as much or more NIL support, and, you know, especially with as much as Hugh Freeze has been struggling. So, yeah, it's interesting. Isn't it fun, Connor, after all these years of Nick Saban's dominance, to kind of see Alabama fans, like, nervous and sweating and uncomfortable?
I love it. Welcome to my world, Alabama fans. Welcome to my last 20 years of being a Tennessee football fan, where you feel like you've got the right guys, but ultimately you're not getting it done. That's why I've just been a huge supporter of Heupel, because I think that he has really built a program there. I think Danny White is doing a tremendous job. You and I talked about it last week, but I'm not sure Tennessee athletics has ever been in a better spot than they are right now.
No, not at all. It's funny, though. In my group text today, we still somehow were arguing over over whether Konzo Martin was a worse coach than Butch Jones and stuff. And I'm like,
oh my God, dude, I was there for both of them. It was awful. Oh my God. I'll never forget Konzo Martin handing out tickets to all the freshmen because nobody wanted to go to the games.
Please, please come and watch. those were great times. They were not great times though, but, at least Tennessee and Memphis played in men's basketball, back then. That was great. By the way, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but, do I have this right? The Tennessee women are at Memphis tonight. How crazy is that?
Oh, yeah, they're there at the FedEx Forum tonight. We're going to get to the Memphis basketball game here, too, in a moment against Virginia. But I did want to ask you about Memphis football and their season. There's been a great debate happening the last few weeks in the city of Memphis. I'm sure you've been a part of it when you've been talking to Jeffrey on Jeffrey and Company. But really, my question to you is, was it a successful football season for Memphis? Key on successful. You know, they have 11 wins for the second time in program history. You beat a Big 12 school for 2 years in a row. You're 2-0 against them. You got a win over Florida State. But ultimately, you weren't able to make it to that American Championship game. So even though you have accomplishments this year, was it successful for Memphis?
Overwhelmingly successful.
Oh.
It's the second time in program history that they've won 11 games. The only other time being the Cotton Bowl season. And I realize you wish you had beaten Navy. You wish you had beaten UTSA. You feel like you didn't accomplish everything that you could have. But it's still, it was overwhelmingly successful. You win 11 games. You win at Florida State. You win at Tulane. You beat West Virginia in a bowl game. I mean, come on, man. 11-2 at Memphis. Like, and I know, like, the standard is at a level that it wasn't when we were growing up. But, like, maybe this is, like, the old man in me speaking, right? But, like, if you remember, like, I know you do, Larry Porter and Rip Shearer.
Do I?
You know, right? Like, I don't know. I just can't shake those memories of what Memphis football used to be. And, like, think about this, too, man. You know Tennessee football history so well, like I do, and like a lot of the listeners do. And it's like, when you reflect back on some of the former years after 98, because, right, they set the bar in 98, just like Mike Norvell and Memphis set the bar in the Cotton Bowl season, what, 5 or 6 years ago now. Well, some of the seasons that came after Tennessee's national championship in 1998 may have felt unfulfilling by comparison in the moment, but when you look back on it, you're like, whoa, Tennessee went to the SEC championship in 2001, 2004, and 2007. We'd kill for that now. And so I think this year, as Memphis progresses and moves into the future of the program, it's going to age really nicely, I think, because you're going to look back and say, wow, we beat Florida State. We won at Tulane. We won a bowl game over a power conference opponent. Seth Hennigan put a cap on a really awesome season, and Mario Anderson was fantastic. And we have power conference transfer Elijah Herring, you know, wreaking havoc on defense. And, you know, it's just like, I think in the moment, sure, a little disappointing not to make the AAC title. But, I mean, I thought all along that the playoff or bust mentality, while it was a great goal to have, to strive for the college football playoff, absolutely, the idea that anything short of that would be a failure is asinine. There's only one school from the group of five that's going to the college football playoff, and that's Boise State. And how good would you – well, think about it, man. How good would you have to been to get that bid over Boise State?
Undefeated.
Right?
You would have to been undefeated. And you still may not have gotten in. You still may not have gotten in, even if you went undefeated with the season that Boise State had.
No, absolutely. So you can't tell me this was a disappointing season for Memphis football.
My take on it was a really good season that we will remember fondly, but ultimately you didn't reach your goal of making it to the American. I always thought the college football playoff would have been a fun thing for Memphis football to be in, and being a part of that discussion would have been an accomplishment in and of itself. But realistically, my bar for success was making it to that conference championship game. And that is why I think that next season for the Memphis Tigers is going to be really interesting, because you're not going to have the stabilizing factor of Seth Hennigan there. It's going to be a new quarterback. Rock Taylor's not going to be there. Mario Anderson's not going to be there. Damar Blankenstein's not going to be there. Chandler Martin, it sounds like he may not be there from what we've heard. So there's going to be a lot of change for Memphis football, and that is why another conversation being had is Ryan Silverfield the guy? And I think that it's appropriate that you bring up that Fulmer example, because I'll never forget, after they made it to that SEC championship game, they fired him. And who'd they bring in? Oh, my God, Derek Dooley. And, that was just – they floundered for years and years and years until they found Heupel. And that is where, you know, in college athletics, when you talk about coaching changes, What is on the other side? What is on the other side? And the grass is not always greener.
Yeah, and you got to be dang sure you got it right when you go and fire a guy, especially because when you look at Silverfield's contract and the way he's got now these automatic extensions when
right.
he hits certain benchmarks of success, that what that means is that so long as he keeps it on the rails, it's going to be really expensive to fire him. And he's more than keeping it on the rails. When you win 21 games over a two-year span at the University of Memphis, I don't care if you're playing Division III. I don't care if you're playing against Rhodes and Sewanee every week. Like, you win 21 games over two seasons at a program that isn't necessarily historically known for football success. Like, you're doing something right. And so, yeah, is he as talented of a coach as Mike Norvell? You know, okay, maybe not. But, like, don't get into this trap of thinking that, like, oh, just because we had success, we should be the college football playoff every year. We should be in the, you know, win the AAC title every year. Now, look, in this conference, yeah, you can absolutely make the case that Memphis should be competing for the AAC championship every season. But I would argue that they competed for it. They were there in the mix. They went 6-2 in the league. And don't discount the fact that, like, Army just got an obscenely easy conference schedule this year. You know, there's little things and wrinkles now with mega conferences that have 14-plus teams that actually make it really difficult when there's no divisions as well to make it to a conference championship game. So, you know, that's part of it as well. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously, like, with Ryan, now it's like another big test. It's kind of one of those things where I think this was a successful season, but not so successful to where you're immune from criticism going
right.
into next year.
Right.
I don't think he gets a free pass for 5-7 next season because they won 11 games this year.
Don't even put that into the world, David Cobb. Don't even put that into the world.
You know, but, like, for example, though, Mike Norvell at Florida State, he did get a free pass this season because of how successful they were last year. Right. They went undefeated and won the ACC championship last year until the bowl game. So he got a free pass because FSU was terrible because of what happened last year. Like, Silverfield, I thought this was a successful season, but it wasn't so successful that he necessarily gets a free pass next year.
Yeah, and that's why, again, I think it was a really good football season for Memphis. We'll remember it fondly. But I also can't discredit any of the criticisms. I can't discredit any of the people who still have questions about Ryan Silverfield. And that is why I am excited to see what happens next year with Antoine Hill Jr. in the mix and what he can do with the new group of players. The one thing that I do think Ryan Silverfield is very good at is working the transfer portal and getting guys on campus and keeping them on campus. And one of those guys that he's kept on campus is Seth Hennigan. You touched on him there. Is Seth the final guy of a breed of quarterback that we'll see in college football? He is the only FBS QB to start at a school all 4 years since 2021. Are we ever going to see that again in college athletics with how NIL is operated?
It's going to be rare. It's going to be rare, especially at the G5 level, where you get a guy of that caliber of talent. It's just going to be hard to pay to keep him, you know? And now I think you look at this run of Memphis quarterback play. Like, I think when people think about 2013 on with Memphis football, it's easy to think about, well, Fuente, Norvell, Silverfield, you think about the coaches and stuff. I think as much as anything, this era, this decade-plus run now for Memphis is synonymous with quarterback play. They've had one of the best runs of quarterback continuity and high-level quarterback play of any program in the country, period. Forget Group of Five. I mean, Power Five. I can't think of another program in college football that's had more continuity in terms of high-level quarterback success for over a decade now as Memphis has, and it's transcended multiple coaching eras. Like, it is amazing when you think about the progression from Paxton Lynch to Riley Ferguson to Brady White and then Seth Hennigan, and how many of those guys started multiple seasons in the program. And so, yeah, for Hennigan to do that in the NIL era, I mean, it's awesome. But it's also a credit to Memphis and the NIL program and to FedEx and to the fans who donate, because without that, they don't keep him, right? Like, I think they said on the broadcast last night, kind of confirming what we all kind of knew, which is that, you know, after last season, it was the closest Seth Hennigan ever came to leaving, right? Because I'm sure he could have gone and made a ridiculous amount of money to play. There's a ton of schools. Florida State, right, who we've talked about some. Like, you don't think he would have been better than DJ Uiagalelei for them this year? You know what I mean? So it's like, clearly he could have gone and played for a high money, high caliber, highly visible program, but he chose to stick it out. And, you know, just don't take that for granted, because obviously, you know, that's kind of the exception now.
I would like DJU to know that I am also declaring for the NFL draft. I think we have about the same chance to be drafted by an NFL franchise. So, DJ, I'll see you on draft night. I'll be there with you. But real quickly, you touched on it there. The run of Memphis quarterbacks has been phenomenal. But I weirdly or would argue, not weirdly, but I would argue that the Memphis running back run they have had is even better than the quarterback one. Tony Pollard, Daryl Henderson, Antonio Gibson, Kenny Gainwell, Blake Watson, Brandon Thomas, and in my opinion, one of the more underrated Memphis players we've ever had, Mario Anderson Jr. It has been unbelievable the amount of talent that Memphis has had, not only at the quarterback position, at the wide receiver position, but also at that running back position.
I was going to say the receiver as well, man. You just think about the progression of guys that they've had there. Rock Taylor and Gabe Rogers and Anthony Miller, the most prolific of them all. So it's the skill talent. And I think that's recognized now by players. I think Memphis has built a reputation in the college football community to where people recognize and realize that you can go to Memphis as a skill position player and reach the NFL. And, you know, it's kind of something where if they got to that level on the defensive side of the ball as well, I mean, how good could they be? And, they have some talent on the defensive side of the ball this year. Just it didn't always pan out. But I thought it was fitting last night that the defense was on the field with the game on the line. I thought Silverfield should have gone for it on that fourth down.
Yes, 100%.
You know, and then so it's like, oh, no, we trust in the defense now to win this thing when you're giving up 37 already. That last play, dude, that was ridiculous.
I was screaming, get down! get down!
Everybody was, man. That was such a fun way to start bowl season. That actually got me really fired up for what we're about to go through. I'm stoked for these next couple of weeks, the college football playoff. And now I'm like, after last night's bowl game, I'm like, all right, like maybe some of these bowl games will actually be pretty good. Because it felt like the guys cared.
They did.
And knock on wood, dude, we're not seeing the mass, like just insane number of opt-outs. Like I know there's some programs that have had coaching changes where guys are opting out, and that's a different story. But like, for example, Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders, I think are going to play for Colorado in their bowl game. That would not have been the case 3 years ago or maybe even last year for some of these guys. So I think that some of that stuff's getting written into their NIL contracts, but it actually makes me more excited just for your run-of-the-mill bowl games because if we get the level of, like, want-to and care factor and lack of opt-outs that we had last night, like, throughout these next few weeks, it's going to be really fun.
Yeah. Final thing for you, Memphis Tigers, Virginia Cavaliers tonight. Right now, Memphis is a 3.5-point favorite. Memphis trying to pick up a quad two win against Virginia. I expect Memphis to be able to take care of business. You have a Virginia team that is a bit in flux because they have program change. You know, the champion of them is no longer there. And, you know, Tyrese Hunter, P.J. Haggerty, Colby Rogers, to keep up that shooting, that defense should be there. Even though Virginia has a brand name, this is the type of team Memphis should handle, no problem.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, brand name, but that's about all they got. I mean, this is the vestiges of the Tony Bennett era. They still have that slow-paced, defensive-first mantra. But they don't have the NBA-level talent. They don't have a DeAndre Hunter on that team. They don't have a Jay Huff on that team.
Hey, you know what I'm saying?
He is. But I'll give you one key to look out for, and that's guarding Isaac McNeely because he's a guy who can fill it up from the outside for them. He's a vet. He's proven. So who's that lockdown defender that Memphis sticks on a guy like that to keep him from getting hot? You know, that's one thing I'll be watching for tonight because Virginia wants to drag you into the mud. They want to slow you down. And, you know, in a game like that, it can hinge on one or two possessions. So, you know, who does Memphis put on McNeely? Kind of how does that matchup work for them? I'll be keeping an eye on that. But absolutely, I agree. It's a game Memphis should win.
David Cobb, this is fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, man, thanks.
That was David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. He does fantastic work over there. I hope he is right that Memphis takes care of business tonight. They should. Memphis is rolling right now. You're trying to go now 3-1 in this four-game stretch. That would be massive for Memphis before you head into the conference schedule. When we come back, we got to get into the Blitz. You're listening to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
SPM. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. He will be on the show tomorrow. Very much looking forward to that. Get his thoughts on Memphis football, college football playoff, and more. But every day on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we do the Blitz. Got to do it right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
The NBA Cup wrapped up last night with the Milwaukee Bucks taking down the Oklahoma City Thunder 97-81. Giannis Antetokounmpo won the NBA Cup MVP trophy.
Giannis right now is plus 600 to win MVP, and he is getting closer and closer to one Nikola Jokic. I still think that Jokic is the MVP, but what Giannis has been doing the last month of the season is pretty remarkable. He has really helped turn around the Milwaukee Bucks' entire season. Now, the NBA Cup also helped that because they do have Darvin Ham on their sideline, and I guess it's written in the stars that he is not allowed to lose an NBA Cup game. He is undefeated when it comes to NBA Cup. Darvin Ham.
Is he actually an assistant there now with
Doc? He's an assistant there with Doc Rivers. Undefeated. Hmm. Undefeated in the NBA Cup. So you could argue they had an unfair advantage in Milwaukee, but I do think that we learned some things from last night's game. One, Giannis Antetokounmpo is one of the best players in the world, probably the second best player in the world.
Yeah.
And this season, and really what the turnaround, you can match it up with when he stopped shooting three-pointers, and he basically just said, oh, I'm 7 feet tall, and I can move like a superhero, so I'm just going to dunk on everybody and cause havoc in the paint. Last night, he had 26, 19, and 10. I'm going to say that one more time. 26, 19, and 10. That was on the offensive side of the basketball. The defensive side of the basketball? 3 blocks, 2 steals.
How many defensive rebounds did he have? I mean, out of 19 boards.
15. 15 defensive rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, which is still big.
Oh, yeah.
6 of 11 from the free throw line. He had 26 points on 19 shots. Good night for him. Really, nobody else really showed up for the Bucks in a huge way. Dame was 6 of 12, 5 of 10 from 3. That's not bad, but he had 23 points. So basically, it was Dame and Giannis Antetokounmpo getting it done. But when you look at the Bucks and their last few games, they are putting together a winning streak here. And they've beaten good teams. They beat the Nets, who are scrappy. They beat the Magic, who are down. The Hawks are a scrappy team. And then the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are really turning it around. They are now 14-11 on the year. They are still 8 games back in their division because they are, you know, Cleveland is in that division. They are 23-4. Oh my God. Cleveland is 23-4. 3-game winning streak, 4-game winning streak if you count the NBA Cup. But they have really turned it around. Is it sustainable? I don't know. Because the Bucks have had a bit of an easier schedule the last month or so. Mm-hmm. So is it sustainable? We shall see. But I do think that one of the lessons we learned last night, other than Giannis Antetokounmpo is an alien, the Thunder. Are they ready?
Human.
The Thunder are human. They're vulnerable. They got a weak spot. And that weak spot is physical basketball. Physical basketball, big stage. It is the reason why, heading into the season, everybody was picking the OKC Thunder to go to the NBA Finals. And even though I did pick them to go to the Finals, I said, if they are vulnerable in any way, it will be physical basketball in a big moment. They have yet to really have their time to arrive in a game like that. They lost to the Mavericks last year in the playoffs because they couldn't stop PJ Washington. They got some reinforcements this year with Isaiah Hartenstein and Alex Caruso, who they got for a bag of chips, and Josh Giddey, which is still makes me angry just to talk about. But the OKC Thunder have a few things to figure out. They've got to be able to deal with physical basketball. SGA's got to show up in big games. He did not show up last night. He was bad last night. Hartenstein got ripped apart by Giannis. Chet is going to help, mm-hmm. but his small frame coming off of a broken hip, is he going to be able to handle a player like Giannis in the playoffs?
That's a certain, I mean, that's more than a good question. It's an actual question mark for the Thunder to have to work out. But if you look at it beyond a guy like Hartenstein, who, if I remember correctly, had a double-double in the game last night, he's going to be good on the glass either way, just his size and instinct. Jalen Williams wasn't great. SGA was inefficient. They're going to have to find scoring other places than SGA and Chet when he comes back. Because beyond those two, nobody could even really get to the cup. No pun intended.
No pun intended. They could not get to the cup. Listen, the Thunder are one of the most talented teams in the NBA. They are probably going to make a run in the playoffs. When they get Chet back, they are going to be much better. But I do think that the Bucks gave people a blueprint last night on how to beat them. Really, really throw bodies at SGA. Be physical. And I know that OKC today is complaining about the whistle. In the playoffs, though, hopefully, if it was the same as last year, that whistle is going to, they're not going to be blowing it a lot. It seems like the NBA wants these guys to be physical once it gets to the playoffs. And can the Thunder handle that? I think that Alex Caruso will certainly help that because he's a demon. Hartenstein will help that because he's been in wars with the New York Knicks. But there is a vulnerable spot with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And hopefully, hopefully a team like the Memphis Grizzlies can exploit that when they get to the playoffs. Because Grizzlies like to play physical. They got scrappy veterans that can match up well with them. I think the Thunder is still the best team in the West, no doubt about it. But last night, you saw some signs that they might not be ready. They might not be ready. We shall see.
Netflix has announced a Drive to Survive-style documentary series following 10 SEC schools through this past season. Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and Missouri declined to be a part of the project.
Are you surprised they declined?
Me? Not at all.
Why?
For one, I feel like college coaches, especially the higher-end college coaches, always act with a level of paranoia. They want to have as little outside chatter about their program as possible, especially ones that have cameras inside the building. Like, I'm sorry, out of those six teams that are not doing it, I cannot see at all. One, Alabama, which I understand Kalen DeBoer is new there, but they still have a lot of influence from Nick Saban, so I'm going to say Nick Saban. Kirby Smart, former Saban assistant, Steve Sarkisian, see where I'm going with this. Lane Kiffin, to even an extent, Brent Venables, worked with Dabo Sweeney. Those guys want as few cameras in the building as they can possibly get.
You tell me that there's some secrets within these college football programs and the SEC that they don't want other people to know about?
It wouldn't shock me. And to your point, because we talked a little bit about this before the show, I'm going to lead you into this a little bit. I just don't see where, especially with this and this being the product, it's not like Drive to Survive. F1 is known for the drama anyway.
It's all unbelievable. About the tea. It's unbelievable.
By the way, if you haven't seen that show, go watch it.
Run to it.
It's
after
so
this show, of course.
Well, and because the show is going to back up to the Tigers game, excuse me.
Absolutely.
Go watch the Tigers game. The one that's kind of interesting to me is Missouri with Drinkwitz saying no, but he's also shown some weird paranoia. You know, what game was that earlier in the season where he was like, he like banned somebody's sister who's on the
God, I love
student
it.
Staff
I love
from
it.
Being in practice that
the
week?
The Connor Stallions effect in college football we are seeing. No, you know, I don't mind that they turned it down. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I need all of these shows. I don't. I watched the starting five for the NBA. It was fine. But are we really learning anything that we don't know? Are these things anything more than propaganda for teams and players? It's not like a true behind-the-scenes look. You're not getting the drama. You're not learning anything new. I feel like we're becoming oversaturated with behind-the-scenes sports shows. I feel like The Last Dance just exploded all of these documentaries upon us, and I don't know if I want them. Like you said, Drive to Survive, I understand a reasoning for that one. The golf one, I understand a reasoning for that
Absolutely.
One. They get into the drama of those sports, though. But when you watch the NBA one, it's so sanitized. When you watch the NFL one, it was so sanitized.
Even Hard Knocks, Hard Knocks
now,
is getting
even
there.
Sanitized. I don't know if I want all of these shows. So I don't mind these programs turning them down. Because would we have even gotten a real look at the program, or would we have gotten what Greg Byrne wanted us to see?
Probably would have gotten what the athletic directors want you to see. That's the way I look at it. I'm with you on that 100%. Going back to something we talked about a little bit earlier this week, the Atlanta Falcons have decided to bench quarterback Kirk Cousins in favor of Michael Penix Jr. against the New York Giants this weekend and likely the rest of the season.
We talked about it yesterday after that Monday Night Football performance from Kirk Cousins and what we have seen over the last few games. We said that Penix clock must be ticking. You saw it during the broadcast. They kept cutting to him every time Kirk would move. It was very obvious he can't do it well. He can't be under center at all because he can't drop back. And it is ultimately holding back what I think is a talented Atlanta Falcons team. They've got a lot of weapons. But if you can't get those weapons, the football, what's the point of having them? And when you draft a guy like Michael Penix and you have a struggling quarterback, you have got to make a change. And that is why I was glad to see that last night Raheem Morris is making that change. Michael Penix is going to be the starter for them this week. I think that is the right move for them. Kirk Cousins had 9 interceptions in his last 5 outings. 9. Is Michael Penix going to come in and be a world beater? I have no idea. I guarantee you he's going to be better than 9 interceptions in 5 games, though. I guarantee you he's not going to have the slowest miles per hour we've seen on a throw since they've started tracking it.
Really?
Since they've started tracking it, George.
Wow.
Slowest one. He is missing guys just because he can't get them the ball quick enough. I've been a fan of Kirk Cousins. I thought that it was kind of insane to give him $90 million 150 days after he tore his Achilles, but I kind of understood it. Stabilizing factor, especially what they've been through with the quarterbacks the last few years over there.
Yeah.
But I did wonder, when they drafted Michael Penix, if they knew. I wonder if they were like, uh-oh, Kirk Cousins, Achilles.
They're on that, because, you know, I've heard people talking about these last couple days. If they knew something when they went to make that signing, you would think that something like that would come up in the physical that all these players have to get done when they make a signing or a draft.
But do they have him running, you know, drills on it? Do they have him throwing the football? Or is it just, hey, his Achilles is good to go? Medically, it is cleared.
I'm sure it's a medical clearance and they're not making him run drills. But at that point when he's medically cleared, but you see him in training camp, probably doing something pretty close to what he's doing now, you have the factor.
And I'll also say, though, he wasn't having to dodge 300-pound guys that can run, you know, 4.5s in training camp. So there's a different factor in NFL games. Hot take. It's different. It's different than practice.
Of course.
I will say, though, it sounds like Kirk is handling this well. He said that he told Michael Penix that he would be in his corner. He is supporting him, and he's going to help him in any way. Because he said that there was an elephant in the room with him replacing him. And he said, I want you to know that you have my support. And it is happening at the right time for the Falcons, because they still got a shot to make the playoffs. They are 7-7 right now. They are second place in the NFC North. They've got a 20% chance to make the playoffs. They own the tiebreaker over the Bucks. They've got a shot. Kirk got them the win last week, kind of. They really won in spite of him in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the right move for them. And they're hosting the Giants on Sunday. I know a lot of people said, well, why wouldn't you bring him in against the Raiders? It's like, well, because you got the Giants. And both teams are not trying to win football games right now.
I'll say this. If they were going to do it, I do think they probably should have done it before the Raiders game. Give him as much game time as possible before a potential playoff push, especially against two teams that struggle in the secondary but still have some pretty solid pass rushes. I mean, I don't know about you. If I'm a rookie quarterback, before I get into a real playoff game, I'd like to at least see what it's like with Max Crosby and Brian Burns chasing me down after down.
Sure, sure. That's fair. That's fair. You don't think the Giants are going to be able to do the same? The 2-win Giants?
Oh, I mean, Brian Burns is still out there playing. He's still doing his thing, but that team is...
I will say, though, I am respecting how Kirk Cousins is handling this. He said he'll be the best number 2 quarterback in the NFL. And I did think that something funny that he said was, I didn't forget how to play quarterback. It's like, Kirk, that's not what we thought. We don't think you forgot how to play quarterback. Your body just didn't have the ability to play quarterback at the NFL level anymore. And that is why this is the correct decision by the Atlanta Falcons. I'm a huge fan of Michael Penix. I was a big fan of him in college. He's a winner, and that matters. He finds ways to win. I hope we can see that translate to the NFL. To be honest with you, I don't really know what to expect from him. I know that he has a lot of very good weapons around him. I bet they run the football a lot to try to get him into the system, calm him down, establish that run, open up the passing game. But you do have Mooney. You've got Drake London. You got Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, Algier. You got guys around you. It's going to be interesting to see. Interesting to see. Good move by the Atlanta Falcons. Will be an exciting weekend watching Michael Penix. That's going to be it for the Blitz today, though. When we come back, we got to wrap up the show. Stick around. Listen to Connor Dunning on 910 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. Before we let you go, got to remind you, tomorrow, All-Star voting opens for the NBA and the Memphis Grizzlies. Obviously, we have a couple Grizzlies we're trying to get into that game. Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant, most deserving. I would still like to see Desmond Bane get some votes, even though he's going through a slump. Let's show him some support. Brandon Clark should even get some votes. But Drew Hill pointed out that there is a very interesting possibility with all-star voting. And I plead to Grizzlies fandom that we make this happen. And if anybody's listening over in Japan, thank you for listening. But we got to make this happen. Yuki Kawamura has got to be in the NBA All-Star game. Could you imagine the electricity in that building if Yuki came in? He's already one of the best shows in the NBA. Chants are happening in opposing arenas. Yuki All-Star, we can make it happen if we come together as one. Memphis, let's come together as one and vote for Yuki tomorrow to make it into the NBA All-Star game. I believe in us. I think we can do it. I think we can do it. That's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today, though. I want to thank my guests, Zoe Goodson and David Cobb. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Gabe Kuhn will join us to recap the Memphis football season and the Memphis basketball game against Virginia, which is going to get going here in just a few minutes. Jason Munn said, same starters as usual for the Memphis Tigers tonight, so make sure you're watching that game and supporting the Tigers. For the Honorable King George, I'm Connor. Peace.